Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode number 45 coming at you, and this one is entitled, "You won the small toss, Outlander, but you won't win the race." And that is because we're going to be talking about winning games this week on this episode. Howdy, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and we are brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and you can find us on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Whew, there's a lot. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and waiting 1 minute and 5 seconds to talk, here is...
your co-host, Brian.
I'm setting new records every time and waiting how long we can see till Brian gets to talk. I guess that's not too much.
You want to wait another minute and five to
no,
talk
you're
again?
Doing well. How are you, Brian? We haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Trying to get back into the swing of things, I guess, for gaming, but...
Yeah, I was on some vacay and we just didn't get a chance to get an episode in because we've been trying to do the weekly thing, but we had to skip one. So
yeah,
sorry, everybody. It just didn't work out. I went away. We'll talk about that, I guess, later because we're going to talk about what we love about vacationing and gaming. So that will be good. Here we go. We're in the swing of the spring and all those things going on. We just did a little board game club down this afternoon.
It's fun. Been nice. The weather's definitely turned, so it's been good. And then, like Bram was saying, just some after-school events here and there and, events at the library. It's been good trying to teach people games and get people playing stuff. So, yeah, it's been great.
How are your board game teaching skills going?
sometimes better than others. I guess it depends on the game and the crowd. That's a couple things. But, no, it's been good. I think it's definitely a different mentality when you're teaching younger, kids, teenagers, younger teenagers and stuff like that. It's definitely different than teaching adults. So
right.
I think just, being exposed to it and trying to teach to that type of crowd, you really learn from the experience there. So I think that's been good.
Yeah.
So yeah, anytime you get some experience doing anything, you're growing. So
yeah,
I think it's been positive.
No, I really just meant because in the last year you've been teaching at a lot more things with library and all those things you were mentioning
and more clubs
and more events at the store where you tend to be teaching and helping with games.
Right.
So it's just, you've been doing a lot more of that. So
yeah, it's not, it hadn't been my strong point. So I think it's getting better and it's, there's always work to be done. And even teaching to one person is completely different than teaching to someone else because, there'll be different attention spans or different ways that they, absorb that information. So trying to just get the pulse of how to play the table in a sense and get people involved and engaged is really, it's fun to try. It's a little stressful at points, but overall it's good.
I find it very ironic that I feel like when I teach gamers, just straight up at the store, just people at my house that I know are gamers, for some reason, I constantly, in that group, skip the how do you win? What's the win structure? Which is so key and important. And when I teach kids or teenagers, I always start with how do you win? And I don't even get to the details of, mechanisms.
Right.
But with gamers, I tend to jump right into, the turn or the round structure. I pretty much I'm good at always starting with the theme, even if it's pasted on or whatever, or people just laugh at whatever it is. I will always start with that theme and this is who we are and this is what we're doing. And I always do that, but I just laugh with gamers. It's almost like they'll pick up on how to win somehow. So that's just an interesting thing.
No, it's also I guess with, it gives me an appreciation for all those people out there demoing at conventions and all that sort of stuff. Or even if they're running events at conventions, it's definitely tough to really get to that point where you've played a game enough to really get comfortable teaching, someone right off the bat, especially if you're running a lot of events or something like that. I know at some of these after school days, I've been bringing a lot of games, So it's tough to just, like, pick a random one out of the pile and, you know, get going right away. So it's definitely, like I said, it gives me that appreciation for what people do, you know, outside of at those conventions and such.
Nice. Well, speaking of teaching a lot of games, we have a huge event on the horizon. International Tabletop Day is coming up April 29th, and I am sure there will be a lot of games taught at this event. So International Tabletop Day is Saturday, April 29th, and it goes from midnight to midnight. So literally every single minute of Saturday, April 29th, the store will be open. In fact, it'll be open Friday night with Friday Night Magic, right? Rolling right in. So if you're, you know, real diehard, you can be there earlier with Brian and roll right through. And so the store will be open all 24 hours. The gaming library is ready and open. And we just expect a good number of people to be there. And the meetup group is going to be there in full force and have people all the way through. I'm going to do my typical, everybody makes fun of me, but I show up, I sleep. I show up at 2 a.m. and then I'm good for 22 hours. So I'm not wussing out. It just, I make it through every time when I do that. Whereas if I just stay up all night and then try to do it, I'm done at 10 in the morning. So, So that's happening. I'll be there. I'm teaching games. They got a whole list of games they want to demo. It's a meetup group that I'm talking about. Really taking a spot there. And you know, they've got, oh, so-and-so is going to teach this. So-and-so's Brant, you just teach everything. So I don't know exactly what I'm teaching. I think I'm teaching Great Western Trail. And somebody was like, yeah, tell me what time you want to slot that, because 2 a.m. would probably be rough. I said, I'm good for 2 a.m. Great Western Trail. I'm down. I'll be freshest at 2 a.m. So we'll have to see from there. A couple years ago when I came, I've told this story a couple times, but I got up in the morning, I got in the shower at like 1 o'clock in the morning, I was like, oh, this is nice, I'm listening to the recap of the Red Sox-Yankees game, and they were actually in like the 17th inning or something, and my whole drive up to the store was listening to that game go into like 19 innings or something, so that was kind of funny to be up that early and whatnot. So anyway, definitely check out the event. Other things that are happening there, Brian?
I mean, like Bram was saying, we'll just have some games demoed. There is going to be an auction, so, you know, check out the Facebook page for a little more information on that. I know John's really heading that one up, so, you know, that should be starting early afternoon with some, like, submissions kind of, I think it's before 12:30 or so. So definitely check that out. You know, besides that, we're going to be doing some raffles and just some sales throughout the day, so check it out, play some games, and just, you know, just get involved in the community. It's really a good day, and people are really, you know, open to just playing games with anyone that walks in the door. So,
yeah, and like, by no means is 24 hours a requirement or a necessity or anything.
Right.
If you've got 4 hours, come out for those 4 hours. If you're an early riser and you want to be up at 7 a.m., but you've got things in the afternoon, come from 7 to noon or whatever it is. Like, there's nothing that says, oh, don't come if you're not going to be for the 24 hours. Like, come, be there, even if you have a small snippet of time. Maybe you have two snippets of time. You've got early morning, then you have to be at something, then you've got late at night again. Come back. We'll be there. We'll be hanging out. I'm hoping to get Code Games going again. That was classic last year. Code Names with the board game covers and just kind of some of that eye candy stuff for people was really fun, and just to see people excited and see unique things that you could do, I think is really exciting. I'm dying to get my Ameritrash on.
So what?
I want to play X-Men Mutant Revolutions, which is like the Spartacus. I know. Well, I've been playing all these Euros. I'm an Omni gamer. I am.
Yeah, I want to.
And I want to try that. I think I'll bring Star Wars Queen's Gambit.
No, that's not a bad game.
No, it's a great game. So I really want to play that with people. Forbidden Stars. I'd love to play Zombicide Black Plague. I haven't tried that yet, and I'd be down for that. Maybe probably even like my Star Wars LCG cards. I don't know if that's Ameritrash, but whatever. Just that window that I just haven't been doing a lot of. So I think I might leave my train games and my, you know, heavy Euros and stuff at home and try to stick to some of these and see what I could get in. So I'm excited for those. So if you're listening and you're interested in playing one of those, tweet at us, write me an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you're just regular at the store, just, you know, find me and say, hey, I really want to do that on International Tabletop Day too. And I'm down. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. So Saturday, April 29th, All day.
All day. There you go. All right. What's on your table? I'm going to kick this off because I got a chance. I'm going to go backwards here, Brian. I got a chance to play Role Player. I think this is Thunderworks. I meant to look it up, and I don't remember the exact name of it. But this was a original Kickstarter game. And so Role Player, and it's R-O-L-L, player, as in roll the dice, is a card drafting, dice drafting, build your character game. So you start with a typical RPG archetype. So you'll be a class and a race. So you'll be an elf bard, or you'll be a dwarf paladin, or whatever it is. And you get these. What's nice is I believe you pick your race as your board, and then you get dealt your class. And then you also get dealt, like, a card which is like your... I'm not an RPGer, so I forget these things. But it's like your, you know, chaotic good and all those kind of things. Like, so you get a character that's related to that. So there's a lot of variability in that setup in terms of what you get. I was a halfling bard, I believe. So I was singing all my tales to other people, which was funny. So anyway, what happens in the game is... you pick a bunch of dice, and there's a bag of dice, and they're colored dice. So the colors relate to the different classes, and you have to have them in different color or different spots. And then there are gold dice or yellow dice, and whenever you place a gold dice, you get gold. So that's kind of those don't relate to a color on your board, but you get gold for placing those. So you start by like rolling six or eight dice, and you place them in a grid. So you have your six character traits. Classic, you know, strength, dexterity, constitution, I can do this, intelligence, wisdom, charisma, and you have three slots in each, so there's 18 dice, so I think you actually start with six. And you place them out in your grid, kind of wherever you want after you roll your dice. And what you're trying to do in the game is get your three dice across to equal some total. So if I want my strength to be 16, I need to have my three dice across being a 16. Your class may also have a bonus. So I don't know, if you were an orc or whatever, I guess you might have a +2 to strength. So whatever your dice total, you'd add 2. And sometimes it's a window, like you have to be 14 or 15, and sometimes it's just a threshold you have to pass. So 16 or higher, whichever it would be. As the game goes on, each round you fill a market with different cards that could be bought, and the cards are all the different types of like equipment that can be worn. So these are the different things you can buy. You can also get like character traits and skills that you can do. So those cards are out in the market, and then you deal out like order cards. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you roll dice. I guess because we had four players, we were rolling five dice. I think it's based on the number of players. I just got one play in. So you roll those dice, and then they go out in numerical order. So the 1 goes with the first player, and the 6s would go with the 5th player card. So then you just take turns drafting, and you get a die and a card. So the card will determine your order for playing in the round, and the die will be what you get to place in your grid. So if you want to go first, you're going to get a 1 or a 2 if it's the lowest roll. But if you want to go last, or if you want a high number die, you're going to go last. And so you take the die and then you place it. Now, each of the skills that you can place in gives you an ability. So, like, you could place in dexterity and you can flip a die or re-roll a die or whatever it is. So you can change the number. So that's how you manipulate all your dice. So you're not just stuck to with whatever they roll. And there's some other abilities you could get on each of those. Not going to go through all those. And then you get your turn order card. So once everybody's drafted, then your turn order is when you get to go to the market. So if you go to the market, you can buy something, buy an item. They all have a cost. You just pay the gold. Or you can refuse to buy anything, in which case you discard a card and you gain 2 gold. So you'll have more for the next turn. And items are mostly set. So like if you get the greaves and the breastplate and the helmet of such and such a type, you get 8 points at the end of the game. So it's all set collection for points at the end. And then the rounds just go around like this, and you're taking those cards. You can activate those skills, and then you can move. Like, you have a cube on that little chaotic, good, neutral card, and you can move up, down, left, and right, and you score certain points in the game based on where that cube is. Then in addition, on each of your skill trees, you've got, for your class, for your race, I really can't remember, I'm sorry, you've got certain dice that have to be in certain places. So I want a white die in the first box on strength and a green die in the third box on whatever. So you're trying to get those. And then whatever your class is has like a colored die. So I was a bard, I was purple. So the more purple dice I had, I got 1 point for each of those. So you've got a lot of different things you're chasing after. You can't achieve all the goals, but you're trying to achieve as many as you can is basically the idea. And you just keep going around, and everybody drafts one die every turn, and then you fill up your board. So I think I was actually wrong. I think it's 18, and you start with 8, and then you play 10 rounds. And they're pretty quick. It's a pretty light game. I mean, it's very light for gamers. But it was fun. It was fun to draft. It was fun to have all these decisions. It was fun to, like, always have these points of, like, okay, when am I finally going to give up on that goal but push for this one? I think in a game like this, because it's light, it was easy to focus on what other people were doing, and it wasn't overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a lot of games where it's like, oh, I really need to know what you're doing, but I'm so stuck on what I'm doing, I can't even think about what you're doing. But in this case, it was like, this isn't that heavy, so I can focus on what people are doing and maybe just, like, hate draft something from them or whatever. And new items and skills, and the skills were fun, and you could manipulate those and get little combos going. And the whole package is, like, 45 to 60 minutes, so it's that perfect time frame. Mm-hmm. So, really enjoyed it. I had heard, like, phenomenal, amazing things, and it was fun. I would play it again. I'd probably seek it out for a good deal to own it. I think you would ask me after I played it, you know, would you buy it? And I was like, well, I'm not sure. I've been on a little buying hiatus, so I'm a little different on that front. But I think I would. I think it seems like a good light game to have around. It was fun. It's a neat theme. You get a lot of people that are into it. You know, you'd have a lot of people that just would not be into that theme at all. They're supposed to expand it so that once you have your character, then you can go, like, fight something with it. Mm-hmm. Which is a cool idea. I mean, that's fun, but I was happy to just build my character. Yeah. I didn't need the next layer. Like, I didn't feel like, oh, I need this character to go into battle now, like, and run a dungeon and play Descent or something. That felt like that would have been empty. It would have just needlessly. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with it. But, I really enjoyed it. I would definitely play it again. Great light game. You know, if it went over that hour threshold, I think it would get a little long, but it was neat. And even though you're doing the same thing every round, there were just so many choices. It didn't need to, like, change up what you were doing. It wasn't like this extreme engine builder where I need something to change mid-game. It just kept doing the same thing till you achieve your goal and manipulate your dice, which was really fun. So that's Role Player, Thunderworks Games.
Nice. So kind of in a similar family, I got a play of Sagrada in from Floodgate Games. I think that's how you pronounce it, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Sagrada, you're building stained glass windows. And you've got a grid that's kind of got some limitations on how you can build it. The way you're building it, you're rolling this common pool of dice, and then you have to draft the dice and place them. Starting from the outside, you kind of have to go off of what you've already placed on the window. So, you know, you'll start on the corner, put down, like, one of the dice of whatever color. Like, there are a couple different colors, and, you know, whatever you roll is also important. Some have, like, restrictions, like you can only place, like, a red die here, or you can only place a 2 here, or something like that. But once you've placed, you have to build off of what you've already started with, and there are restrictions for what you can place adjacent to it. So you can't place the same number or the same color orthogonally adjacent to another die that you've placed. So, you know, once you're kind of building up, you're getting to a point where all of a sudden, you know, there are a lot of restrictions going around. If you're trying to place, like, one die next to, like, three different dice, then all of a sudden it's like, I can't do this color or this number or this color or this number. So, you know, there are a lot of restrictions there, but it's neat. It's going back and forth. You're drafting a couple dice around up until you finish up and you either, you know, like, till you have the potential to fill up your entire stained glass window. Obviously, like, if you can't place some because of the restrictions, like, you're going to get some negatives for not finishing it, but the intent is that you would be able to if you get a die every time you can draft one. There are a couple ways you can manipulate them. There are, like, some tools that are available, and I think those were variable. So, you know, the ones that we played with, you could kind of move some dice around, like, slide them to adjacent area or to different areas on the board. There's one where you could, you know, put some of the dice that you were drafting back into the bag and grab a new one, but then you'd get to choose what number it was. So you're kind of randomizing just the color and then getting whatever, you know, whatever you want for the number. There was another one that we played with. I don't remember exactly what that one was, but it, you know, another way to manipulate what you can get and how you can put it out on your board. You know, and along with this, there are also common goals as well as personal goals for, like, what you're really trying to focus on. Mm-hmm. Some of the common goals are, like, what we played with, like, we had to get different types of dice in our rows, like, on our grid. So it's, like, you got X number of points if you successfully achieve this per row that you do it. So I forget, one was, like, if you have different numbers all the way across the grid, and I think it's, like, there are five spaces across. So you just have to have five different numbers or, you know, something like that. So there are a lot of different ways that you can do it. Or we also had it so you get points for fives and sixes, like sets of fives and sixes and sets of ones and twos just in your entire grid. And then you have personal objectives where they're giving you benefits for getting, you know, a color. Like if I drafted a lot of green dice, like I would get points equal to the number of pips or something like that. But, you know, it definitely gets really restrictive. So even if you're trying to go for your personal objective, you really have to, like, you know, maximize what you're doing with your area. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it was fun. I played two player. It was still like, it was good as a two player drafting game, which was good. Nice to see. Cause sometimes those are a little bit weird, but
I don't know. What was the drafting style with two players?
So it was just, we rolled, five dice. First player picks one, second player picks two, first player picks one, and then that last one goes into, like, as, like, a turn tracker.
Gotcha.
So you know how many you do. So it's, like, two per round for that. You know, so it was neat. I guess it would be, Sagrada would be, it kind of fits in that, like, you know, light to kind of medium, I guess. It depends on what you're looking for, but it was fun. It would be a good filler, you know. I guess it depends on the price point for me whether or not I'd pick it up, but I enjoyed it. I guess it's kind of in that same realm where, like, I had fun with it. I would buy it to, like, to play it with people that, you know, I'm not looking into to get, like, a heavy euro in with, but I guess there are a lot of games that kind of are in that category now. I don't know if it would be enough to jump out of that and really, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, above that category, but I enjoyed it. It was, Sagrada was fun. I would definitely play it again, and I'd like to try it with a few more people just to see how that does too. Because there are definitely points where it's like you're really focused on how to mess over your opponent as a two player game, and maybe like three or four people, you know, it's a little bit more of like how do you do your personal stuff and still kind of try to affect other players, but not as much.
Does it hum along with two? Was it like 30 minutes or?
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't long. I don't remember the how long it took, but it didn't feel like it lasted too long. Like, it was pretty quick.
And the goals and the personal goals and all that stuff, that was,
so,
like, cards?
Yeah, like the personal
out?
Goals.
So they'll change up all the
change
time?
Up. The personal That's goals great. Were kind of focused on drafting a specific color, I believe. And the common goals, you know, there are a few to pick from, but they all kind of had that similar idea where maybe it was focused on rows instead, or columns instead of rows, or there was another one that we didn't play with where it was like sets of threes and fours. So, like, there are a few things in there. Yeah, and like I said, like, not filling up parts of your board, you get negative points for that. And the tools that you can use, you actually have points to spend, basically. I forget what it was called in the game, but basically when you're picking a grid to play off of with those restrictions, they have like a set difficulty in them based on how it would be to, like, how easy it is to fill it up. So, you know, like, there are some pips on the bottom of the thing, like, and then you get that number of like resources to kind of spend on those tools. So first person to go on a tool spends one of those resources, and they mark it, like, they leave that resource on the card. And then if anyone else wants to use it, you can still use it. You have to spend two resources, like anyone that uses it again. So, but no, yeah, I enjoyed it. But yeah, who's to say? It should be interesting to see, like, if a lot of people do kind of have it out there and they're playing it, like, it would be cool to just see some more from the company with it. But I don't know. I enjoyed Sagrada from Floodgate Games.
Yeah, it's just neat to see, like variability in games is now just, like, a must. Right. Every game has variability, and it's great in light games because it can keep you playing them even if, you know, like, you're just, like, a gamer, you really just mm-hmm. want something. At least that lightness gives you a different feel every time, so as you're introducing it to different people or teaching it, you just get a different game every right. time, which is great. And then it's just neat to see, like, drafting becomes dice drafting, and deck building becomes bag building, and all those mechanisms that change just slightly and become even more mm-hmm. fun, you know? So that's yeah. cool.
But, and the game looks great as well, so I guess that's another thing. Like, if you want something to be a focal point on a table, like, it looks really good, too. And I guess I'd hope so if it's you're building stained glass windows, right?
How are the minis in the game?
They were the best kind of minis.
Non-existent?
Yeah.
Nice. All right, we both got a chance to play this one. Onward to Venus. And so this is from Tree Frog Productions and Martin Wallace, who is Tree Frog Productions.
Who was, right?
Who was. Well, they have one more game, right?
Yeah, stars. I think so.
Something with stars. Among?
Something full of stars.
Oh, Handful of Stars.
Handful.
There you go. Sounds like a, like, cereal or something.
Or a Western.
That's right. All right. Anyway, so we got to play Onward to Venus. So Onward to Venus is based off of a graphic novel, comic strip, something, you know, where man is exploring all the galaxy and everything. And so that's what's happening here. And so we each had a different nationality. We played with five people. And so you get a little set of cards, and then you get tokens for spaceships, infantry, and tanks, right? And basically your goal in this game is to go out amongst the galaxy and build mines and build factories on all the different planets and have the most production on a planet, in which case you score points. So it's essentially area control on each planet. And then you just play three rounds of the game, which seems short, but they're 30-plus minute yeah. rounds. And then you score all those planets, and there's a couple extra points that you can get. You can hunt big game, and they're worth a point. You can solve some crises or whatever, and they're worth a point, and a couple other things that you can do for points. But for the most part, it's the majorities on those planets that you're going for. So the game is mostly card-driven. There's also actions you can do. So it's action selection. You get one action on your turn. And everybody starts with their pieces. So basically your pieces can be on a planet, in which case they're like exhausted, or they could be off the planet ready, or kind of in a ring around the planet. And so everybody starts basically around Earth, and then you just go from there. And you can move along the place, and the moon is one of the planets as well. One of the places as well, thank you. And so on your turn, you can move, and you can take your spaceships, and they can move two spaces, or you can land on a planet, and all the planets at the start of every round get filled with all these tiles that you draw from a bag with all sorts of different things, so you can go somewhere, and you put a unit down on the planet, you can draw more cards, or you can hunt the big game, or you can attempt to build a factory, or take over a factory, or all sorts of different things there. So the crux of the rest of the game is driven by a giant deck of cards with all sorts of abilities. So it might say, when you try to attack something, you can add one to your combat value, or play this as an action to gain five money. Oh, one of the other actions you can do is build units. So you mostly build around Earth. Unless you have a factory elsewhere, then you can build some things elsewhere. And so, yeah, you're going from these planets and you're taking all these tiles. Now, one of the things that's important is there are certain things that you can attack to take over. So, like, you can attack and take over mines when they come out. And so they'll have, like, a base defense value, like 3. And then what you do is you roll 3 dice, and they're D6s, except I think there's no 1, there's just a skull. And so you roll the 3 dice, and you get rid of the middle die. So if you roll a skull and a 3, you take the difference, which would be 3 minus 0, the skull counts as a 0, and you'd add that to the defense. So 3 plus 3 would be 6, and then you need to commit that many points in units. So tanks count 2 points, spaceships and infantry count 1, and then you can play cards from your hand. And you'd have to exhaust those units by putting on the planet, and if you meet that value, which is unknown at the start of combat, but you can get there, you know, with your units, then you would take over that mine that would be yours. if you roll one of those skulls, you also have to lose a unit in that battle. So there's not full casualties, but there's like a partial casualty that you can get there. You can't attack each other unless there is a tension tile that comes out. So these are random tiles that come out, and once there's a tension tile on a planet, you can kind of trigger that tile and attack somebody else's building and take it over if you're successful. So that's the main structure of the game. I guess the other thing that's important is these crises tiles come out on each of these planets, and if there gets to be enough crises tiles at the end of the round, then each planet has its own individual thing that happens, which is pretty neat. Like, it's pretty thematic in terms of, like, but a lot of them that we came across were just like, there's an uprising on Venus, and they destroy the person with the most, you know, they lose a factory or something.
Right.
There are some, like, at the end of the galaxy that if you get enough crises tiles, then, like, aliens spawn and they start attacking and down the galaxy and people can take them over, which is a pretty neat mechanism, but I don't know that you would see that one very often in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get enough of those out there, and it's so random based on, you know, what actually is coming out. I think that's kind of what I wanted a little bit. I wanted something a little more dynamic that could change up, you know, the line of thinking. Like, it's not... Like, it became very, very linear, like, just in the way, like, people were kind of thinking on the area control mentality. Like, it didn't really feel like, you know, like there was enough to kind of force people into something that they weren't necessarily comfortable with, you know? And I guess that's just what I was hoping for a little bit, like, especially with the flavor for it, like, the feel and the theme and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's not necessarily a negative. Maybe I was just kind of hoping for something more than it was. But, you know, I enjoyed it to say, like, it was still fun. It felt like it could have been a great game with, like, a couple things, like a couple tweaks here and there. But
it felt to me like a Euro Thrash or an Amera Euro or whatever, like, but it almost felt like the parts were opposite. Like, where it was Euro, I wouldn't have minded it being some more Ameritrashy, and where it was Ameritrashy, I wouldn't have minded it being more Euro. So, like, those tension tiles were neat because they were trying to prevent the just, like, pure utter chaos of if everybody could just attack each other all the time. That it would be all about having the last turn.
Right.
You know? And so that's what those were for. But then the tension tiles became too directive and too predictive. Like, oh, all I have to do is, you know, is that person's going to go to that spot, and then there's no more tension this round. So that's it. Now everybody just go get what you can for points, and there's, like, really nothing else you could do.
And there were a couple planets that didn't see any battles on them. You know, like, more than, there weren't many that had that as a focal point.
Right.
You know, and even the ones, like, one of the planets where there was a tension tile, like, it didn't get there to the end, and people weren't really focused on that planet, so it seemed like it was kind of a weird, like, you know, it just felt like someone had to kind of wait it out. And then, you know, then it triggered something bad for the person who went on there first.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It definitely had some areas. And I think, like, the deck of cards, like, that was a little strange, too. Like, it's fine. I know, like, any card game is going to have luck. You know, like, when you're kind of dealing out cards or drawing from the deck, you're going to have... It's going to change up what people get. But this one was kind of in that vein of, like, some cards are purely better than others.
Five attack versus one attack.
Right.
It was so extreme.
It just didn't seem like... That part didn't seem fun. It felt like someone could really, you know, be out of the game based on what they draw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, there were a couple cards that just seemed way out there. Like, I feel like you either need to kind of go and, you know, like, balance those a little bit more, have cards that can be swingy, but you need to have enough of them to really make it, you know, make it viable for everyone, or make it so people can kind of mitigate that luck. So I guess that was one of the weird areas to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, and then the combat, those dice, trying... I guess it seemed like it was mitigation, but when you remove that middle die, it's more swingy, right? Like... Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, oh, take the two closest dice. So then you'd be saying, well, I'm rolling three, so it'll just be a little bit of extra you have to predict. But it's almost like at that point, yeah, I like combat to be not, you know, not absolutely I know it's going to be, But that just felt really swingy. Like, if I roll a skull, then I'm going to lose a unit. And
yeah.
Like, a 6 to a 0 adds 6. Well, I don't even have that many. So I'm hoping I roll a 2 and a 5, and I have 3 extra, but I can't cover the right. other. It was just a lot. Or I don't have that card in my hand. So those things became a little bit much. I feel like we harped on a lot of negatives, but we did have fun playing right. the game overall. Like, it was worth a play. Probably not necessarily in that category of I would bring it out again to play with people, but if right. somebody's like, I love this game, will you play it with me? I would play right. that with you. And I love the, like, turn structure is super fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you basically know your one action, you carry it out next person's turn. You're yeah. waiting a little bit for people to roll dice, but even with five of us, I mean, I was waiting maybe 3 minutes to get back to my turn. Yeah. And you just keep going. And then it has that fun mechanism of when you pass on your turn, you take a little cube, and there's like, I think there's like 7 cubes with 5 players, or 9, and when they're all gone, oh, you get to draw a card when you do that. And when they're all gone, then the round is over. So that's kind of a fun thing, although most people just kind of strung out all their actions, so they didn't really have anything left. It wasn't really like a group mentality of like, let's stop this person, you know, ahead of time, so some of that was missing.
Yeah. But people were also quick to like, to want to house rule, like, some of the aspects, like the tension tiles,
yeah.
or, you know, stuff like that. And I guess it's just, it's not every game where, you know, we talk about it after and it's like an immediate, oh, I want to change this one thing to make it more fun. You know, like, maybe there are things that we'd like to see that come out of games, or, like, you know, ways that we'd like to try it out or something like that. But this one was one where it really spurred that conversation where people wanted to play it differently. So I think that's just where, like, the negatives that we're talking about are enough to not get us to initiate another play.
Yeah.
But they're not so far on that end where we would refuse another play. So it was kind of more in a, you know, like, if you've got, you just kind of have to temper your expectations a little bit and really know that, you know, it's not a perfect game, but you can have fun playing it.
Yeah. Cool. Did you have another one you were going to talk about?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to quickly mention that I played Scythe Solo from Stonemaier Games. That's not the name. It's Scythe from Stonemaier Games. I played it in the solo variant where you're playing against an automated deck. And you're actually trying to, like, you're kind of playing a similar style of game, but, you know, your opponent is just doing all these moves that are kind of generated for it by this deck of cards. So you don't have to make any decisions for them. Everything is really laid out, and they're kind of doing stuff and kind of progressing along the board and, you know, attacking here and there based on what they draw and generating resources and all that sort of, or generating more units, not necessarily resources, yeah, I guess. They get money and units.
Steal your
and,
resources.
Yeah, they take away stuff. But I don't know, I wanted to try this one out because I believe it was the solo game winner for the Golden Geek Awards.
Gotcha.
Right? So I heard about it, like, I think I heard about it on the Stronghold, and I think Stephen Bonacore talked about how Terraforming Mars came in second or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Where I'd played Terraforming Mars so much solo that I wanted to try this one out as Scythe won that award. And I can definitely see where people are coming from. I think the automated deck that Scythe has in it has really spawned a lot of other Euros to really try to do yeah. a similar thing, which is amazing. Like, that's really cool. I think I only have one play of it under my belt solo. I did not like it as much as Terraforming Mars, so I wanted to try to, you know, compare those, but I definitely do want to try it again. It's just not something where, like, I want to get Terraforming Mars back to the table again before I get Scythe back to the table as a solo game.
Yeah. No doubt in my mind, the Scythe solo is more innovative than the Terraforming Mars one, because the Terraforming Mars really is, I'm playing solo. Like, right. I'm just playing Terraforming Mars solo, where Scythe, you know, he hired out for another right. person or group to come up with a solo. And yeah. that, like you said, it's spawning new ideas for people. And I like how the units, like, warp across the board. They really are programmed to come after you and kind of mess with your plans and everything, and that's neat. But I agree with you. Terraforming Mars is just, I just love engine building so much.
Yeah.
And I guess you're kind of engine building inside. It's just not as big. It's not, you know, you've got some territory and things there. But I mean, it's no shocker coming from me because Scythe was like my number 10 game of last year, and Terraform Mars my number 1. So, like, it's just not really fair on that front either. Mm-hmm. So, I could see that. I don't know if more people would have played Scythe solo than Terraform Mars solo. I mean, Terraform Mars hit pretty big, and Scythe hit pretty big. There's been more time. I'm not sure on that front. So, yeah, to me, the Scythe one was more innovative. There was definitely unique ideas to the solo game in there. There really isn't anything unique, right. Although what they're doing online with the Terraform Mars, the Fricks brothers are supporting all these, like, monthly contests, and each company that you have in the game has their own, like, record that people try to set. But again, that whole, like, set your own score thing is, you know, I'm happy to just win Terraform Mars. Typically, I'm not always comparing my scores.
Is that because you're not getting high scores, or some of those scores are really like way up there?
It's hard in that game to like focus on the cards that score you points. Yeah. But I imagine if you can do that, you can really get your score going.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one where you have to like turn that corner eventually, or you know, if you can recognize that you will be able to finish up Terraforming Mars,
right?
You know, by some rat, like, because you need to do that before the end of the game. And it's really difficult to do that in, you know, unless you really, I guess it takes some getting used to. Like, even after, like, a bunch of plays under my belt, like, it's still, you really have to focus on getting that done. It's not something where it's like, okay, I've played it 20 times, I can get guarantee that I'll finish Terraforming Mars, so I just want to focus on points. Like, that's not really how that game is structured, so. Yeah.
I think, too, those companies, as simple as the changes are for each one, like Asymmetrical Powers, they're a bigger deal, a bigger driving factor than the asymmetrical power or the board you get that mixes things up inside. That's a cool idea. Again, that's very innovative, the way you can switch those boards and everything, but I just don't think it directs you as asymmetrically as the powers do in Terraforming Mars. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
that's another piece that I think is a lot better. But it doesn't make Scythe solo bad. It's fun, and moving all the little toys around the board, you know, is super fun. I'm sure you had cut out pieces of squares that you rode on because you couldn't handle the miniatures. But
yeah, I think part of the problem with Scythe playing it again, like, it's on my table behind us, and it's all just, just scooped the table off. Like, the all the pieces are in the box top, and it's just all completely scattered, so I'm not like motivated to sort that out at the moment. But
nice. Well, that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, Brian, you won this small toss, Outlander, but you won't win the race. That is everybody's favorite toy dairy in Watto. So we're going to talk about winning games. And, you know, what does winning a game look like? And what kind of games do we like to win? And where are we not worried about winning? And all those different types of things. I suppose if you're going to talk about winning games, you're probably going to talk about losing games as well.
Right.
In terms of that. But I guess my kind of motivation behind this is I find, the more I'm teaching, the more I'm playing, the more new games I'm learning, I'm losing some of that drive to win. Not that I don't want to win. I still want to win, but I really don't take it that harsh when I lose because I feel like, I'm just going to play another new game. Like, and I move on to another new game, and I'm totally enjoying the experience. There are certainly games in the past where I have been frustrated to lose, and I don't want to sound out holier than thou and say, oh, I don't care about winning. You can beat me all the time. I only lost by 1 point to you because I was being nice. I'm not doing any of that. And there are times I totally, you know, and I play to win. I don't play to lose. Mm-hmm. But the other night we stayed up playing 1846 again, and I was in third place and totally fine with it, learning that game and figuring things out and doing the math and like, oh, I had a perfectly fun experience trying to get my trains going, and I was third of three, and I was not frustrated at all with my score or the experience or anything like that. It was still figuring all that out. So I'm just finding that the more I'm playing games and playing with other people, winning isn't as big a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends Like, you definitely have to have that mentality going in. Like, you could have a bad day, and all of a sudden it's like every little bit really, you know, messes it up. Or you just have a bad attitude for coming out of something. But, I don't know, I think it's definitely noticeable. There are definitely some games where I enjoy kind of putting those pieces together no matter how it ends up. You know, even like Deus or something like that. Like, it was fun, even though it was like kind of a landslide for Larry. Like, he ran away with it. But it's one where you try to put together your own personal engine. And, you know, if you win, you win. If you don't, that's fine too. It didn't feel like with that one that it was a, you know, I lost because I'm stupid sort of thing. You know, I think that's where it's frustrating. It's like, if you feel like you've kind of just played poorly or just, you know, not been thinking at the same level as everyone else, I think that's where that frustration can come from. You know, because there's kind of some embarrassment or something like that that can come out of it. But, you know, I think even looking back to what we were just talking about, like Terraforming Mars, like, I don't really care if I'm winning when I'm playing with other people. I want to win when I'm playing solo, but with other people, I want to just have fun with it. I want to build up what I've got going on and see what happens. You know, even something like Roll for the Galaxy, like, that one's so easy to get to the table. I just, you know, I want to play that one, try strategy and see if it works. I think it's even worse, like, when we are playing games once and then we're done with it. You know, there are some ways that you can kind of argue that, oh, well, we haven't really learned it, and like, we haven't figured it out, so it doesn't really matter. But it's also tough because that was your one chance to really try something and see how it goes. And then if you're not competitive, then, you know, it's not something that you're necessarily going to want to get back out to the table. But I don't know. I guess I don't care as much about winning. I just want to feel like I'm aware in the game. Like, I'm thinking at the same level as people. Even if they've got something, they saw something better, they figure out a way to kind of, you know, get to the end with a better score or something like that. I just want to feel like I'm competitive and I've been playing to challenge them too. You know, so they have to think optimally. Or, you know, it's bad if it's like they're not doing like something optimally and then all of a sudden and you're losing to them, then it can be even worse. But I don't know. I guess that's just where I want to be competitive, and I want to keep people honest. Yeah. I think that's kind of where it's been for a lot of things, even like playing Ultimate Frisbee or something like that. It's like, I don't care if you beat me, I just want to make you beat me.
Yeah.
And that's just where I'm coming from with it.
Now, on that front, I do notice that the more I'm playing and playing like with kids or people that don't game a lot, I'm just playing my game, and sometimes that leads me to beat them more often than not. And that's fine with me, too. I'm not really trying to lose to people, or I'm not even really even thinking about it.
Right.
Like, I'm literally just, oh, this seems like a good choice, and that seems like a good choice, and I'm going to move over here, and, oh, it looks like I have 20 more points than you, like, with my daughter, and she's fine with it. Like, people don't seem to... I play with a lot of people that don't seem to worry about it as much, and my daughter's a great loser. I don't know if that's a quotable thing there, but she handles, like, it's only been recently that she's even like recognized winning versus losing. It's never really been a thing for her. But I played with some other younger kids where, like, they have to win, otherwise it was a terrible game. Like,
right.
It was awful for them, and she's not really ever like that. I've seen her get upset a couple times lately because she realizes, like, oh my gosh, I've just lost like the third time in a row, and it's bothering her that she feels like she's not getting better.
Right.
But that's kind of a cool thing to teach a kid to me. Mm. Like, hey, you're recognizing you want to get better at this, right? So that's kind of neat. But I have noticed that the more I've been playing like at game clubs and things like that, I'm like, oh, I won. And not even out of a like, okay, here I go. Like, but I just don't particularly focus on, like, here's a suboptimal move, here's a suboptimal move, or here's a completely opposite strategy. I haven't even been doing that thing as much, and it's gone over pretty well. So that's just kind of an interesting piece.
Yeah, I guess when I was talking about it, like, trying to compete with other people, like, it's definitely in that gamer versus gamer mentality. Like, when you're trying to teach someone, or, you know, you're just getting to something to the table to try to get people interested in the hobby, like, that's a different mentality entirely. Like, I'd be happy just kind of running through, and, you know, if there are moves that people should be making, where I feel like, it's just different. If someone is a gamer or something like that, like, I'm not necessarily gonna make every single correction from, like, a generic sort of, you know, like, if people have played enough games, I feel like there are certain things that they should be able to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if someone's playing and they're new to it, they might not see, like, okay, I should be doing this to really, you know, get a lot of points, whereas I'm doing this and I'm not getting nearly as many. I'm thinking, like, Mission Red Planet, like, I think a lot of people were, you know, focused on, like, individual zones, and it's like, you don't need 20 people on that zone. No one else is competing with it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you don't need to keep moving people there. You won that one, but you need to try to focus on other things. You know, like, it's just funny. It's a different mentality when you're playing with kids.
Yeah.
And it's just something where you kind of have to be like, okay, you know, that's fine. If you don't care about winning and losing, that's fine. Like, you might want to try to do this to spread it out and get a few more points. But if you don't care, you don't care. That's fine. But even playing with them, like, I'm not necessarily, like, you definitely don't want to, like, do something where you're stopping the play, the flow of the game, to think of your optimal mode, like, your optimal play. Like, you should just keep it going, keep it flowing, and help people out when they need it. You know, and that's a whole different thing. Like, winning shouldn't matter when you're teaching, or if you've played enough that, you know, you know the game in and out. You shouldn't necessarily be looking at it as, I need to win this game to to kind of pat yourself on the back.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, 2 years ago, like, it was a bigger frustration for me starting to play some, like, heavier Euros and, like, medium-heavy Euros, and really, like, being like, oh my gosh, I'm not winning these. Like, I'm not doing well at these, and I feel like I think well. And so it was a little bit of frustrating, and I feel like I've been playing even heavier Euros in the last year, and it doesn't even matter to me. It's almost like the experience of actually making sure I can maintain and learn and understand the complexities of those games is the excitement in those games. But, like, the medium weight Euros are like, oh, maybe I'm not as smart at this or as good at this as I thought. Mm-hmm. I used to get frustrated a little bit more, so it's just kind of interesting. And my wife just totally keeps me in check. Like, she just beats me left and right and everything. I love, there's a new board game breakfast segment just this last week, and it's I teach, she wins. And my wife was like, that is totally us. And I was like, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, she really beats me like 75% of the time at these things. And awesome, great. It's a good challenge. Then that just means if I'm not winning, then I got nowhere to go but up, you know, in terms of trying to win more. And so that's just really fun.
No, it is funny when it's like, I'll bring something home and I'll play with Rachel. You know, I've played it like, you know, 3 or 4 times or something, and I'll teach her. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm not even close to beating her at the end. And it's just like, it's funny. It's rewarding to play stuff like that. And just, you know, like you said, get kept in check in that sort of sense where it's, you know, you realize that you're not at the top of, like, you're not at the peak. You're kind of with everyone else. Like, everyone's in that same boat, you know, and people are just, they have different ways of thinking about different games too. It's not like you can't judge how you're doing in life, you know, by how you win at games or anything like that.
And then the other part that's interesting, you were mentioning playing with kids, and it's funny, like, there's no AP with kids. So it's like, I was playing, or I was teaching them Survive, you know, and they get to move a whale 3 spaces. Well, you know, you play with a gamer, they're gonna put their finger down and they're gonna count 3 spaces in this direction and point to all the possible locations and then slowly pull one finger up at a time and have 3 options and then decide, okay, this will set up for this next move, and they're like strategically moving the whale, you know? And these kids, it'll be like, there's a boat 2 spaces away, and they move directly away from it with no thought process or anything. So instead of that challenge of like, ooh, can we play this game in what the box says? It's like, can we get up to that time? Will we even play for that long? And so it's kind of fun, and it leads you to not like AP because it's like, well, they're going, so here we go.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting. So that's just a funny thing. And I think that speed can sometimes lead, like, okay, that one's done. Next, here we go. Like, winning, losing doesn't, you know, make a big difference on that front. So, yeah, kind of neat there. Anything else on winning? You really have most experience with losing, so you probably don't. Oh, I know one other thing. I was talking about wanting to play more Ameritrash games. And so one thing is, maybe it's particularly to that style of game more often, but don't get me wrong. I still want to be able to have those moments where you've got me beat, and the only way is maybe if I roll this bucket of dice and get 12 sixes, then I win the game. And when I roll that bucket of dice and get 12 sixes, I still want the right to stand up and cheer and say, "In your face, Raditz!" and have that fun moment. And not out of actual, like, oh, I really right. want you to feel bad, but just to have that exciting winning moment. So I still think those are important for people. I mean, there's the whole be a good sport and all that kind of stuff. And I want to, but I would hope mostly amongst, you know, gamers, if it's people you play with, that you can still have those moments of, like, pure joy. I remember, actually, I think you were in the game with us when somebody was, you know, we were not going to win King of Tokyo, but this one person managed to roll six claws to knock somebody out, and even that person is high-fiving them. And that, I always want that spirit to be available at a game. Hey, if you take me out by rolling six claws in King of Tokyo, I want to high-five you.
All right, so Brent and I will be playing different games on Tabletop Day, so just be aware.
You want dry soulless heroes? Find Brian.
If you want to high-five people and have fun, see Brent.
Nice. That is a good way to end our segment on winning games. All right, so we move on to what we love about ... Now, I was just away on vacation, went to Washington, D.C. with my family. I was doing some tweeting from our account with hashtag gaming in the capital because we were sightseeing, and as I found different things, old cars, I was tweeting about Krothwagen and stuff like that, and it was kind of fun. We saw pandas, so I think I was doing Animals on Board, and or Takenoko, or some of them, so that was kind of fun. So I want to talk about what we love about traveling or vacationing and gaming, because those are things that I think go hand in hand, because gaming really goes with everything. Bread pudding and gaming. Sounds perfect. So yeah, just talking about some of these different things. So I just think board games are awesome because I feel like when you're on vacation or when you're traveling, most of the time family, friends that you're with are more open to wanting to play games because games are definitely perceived as a relaxing activity. And so it seems part of like, okay, yeah, it's not a work night or a week night or, oh my gosh, we're chasing kids everywhere or we're just exhausted. I finally have 2 hours. I just want to veg in front of the TV. But it's like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that sounds fun. Let's do that. Or when I would go to vacation, like beach house with my family in the middle of the day, we would sit down and play Timeline or something. And everybody, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Sure, that sounds like a fun thing to do. So I just love incorporating that into it because I guess it's just more avenues to teach people more games and just to get to play with family and other people. So I really like that piece of traveling, vacationing, and gaming. Sure.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's been really good to do that, especially with Rachel's family, you know, because they've been playing games longer than I have, so it's been really good to kind of go out and, you know, play with her dad or, you know, just the in-laws and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's just been really good to do that. So I don't know, I guess the tough thing for me is really initiating that, trying to like focus on getting something on the table, like especially when there's so many other things going on. You know, that's never really been something that I've done. Like, it's good when they're kind of in that same mentality and they want to play games and I'm there. Like, I enjoy playing games too. So it's nice when that kind of works together. I guess I haven't seen it as much, you know, with my family, my immediate family, like my parents and my brother and all that sort of stuff, because I haven't really focused on it. Like, I'll definitely, like, when we went up to Maine for a wedding, like, we brought up a couple games, and I think I played some stuff with Rachel, but not something where it kind of went beyond that. And I think, you know, my parents or something would walk through and see it, or, you know, my brother would look, but they weren't playing, and it wasn't something where I was trying to get them to do it. But I think that's just dependent on the structure of the vacation or whatever it is. So, but I know even when we went like camping or something, like, it's just great to have stuff with you that you can, you know, break out. And a lot of times there's even stuff that, you know, maybe you haven't played enough or played recently. So it's cool to get those back to the table. Like, I remember a few years ago now, like, we played Glenmore, where it had been, I think it had been a gap where people hadn't really played before, but it was one of those ones where it was nice to get it to table and kind of have that refresher of, like, okay, yeah, this is why I like playing this game, or, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff, I guess, has been really good.
And we discovered that skunks love Glenmore, because I believe that was the famous skunk incident.
Just that one would not leave us alone.
At the campsite. But yeah, just recently when we went down to New York Toy Fair, you, like, so that's a kind of a traveling as opposed to vacation, but you had, like, kind of extreme packed a bunch of games. So you did a great job with a bunch of small games.
But then we played one of them.
We played a couple, right? We played Montanai.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we played
One Deck Dungeon.
Did we play something else while we were there? Were those the only two?
I think those were the only two.
I thought we had played something else.
But I had, like, 10 games.
Gotcha. But still, you did a good job of kind of compacting all those
games. I haven't separated them out, though, yet.
Gotcha.
So, that's problematic.
All right, well, I'll talk about going to Washington. So, on the way down, we were playing Cow Tiger Santa Claus. So, this is a game from Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback that they designed, and they just found that, you know, license plate bingo is just a nightmare, trying to find all the license plates. It's fun. Like, it was fun. We still did it, admittedly, but it can get a little boring. So they just came up with, like, easy, medium, and hard categories, and you draw a card, and then you try to find that thing in your travels wherever you go. I mean, if you see this thing on a urinal cake, it counts.
Did that happen?
No, it didn't happen, but whatever it is. And so, you know, cow is from the easy category, tiger's from the medium, and Santa Claus is from the hard. So we had those three, and we managed to find them all in unique places. We found a food truck that was a cow. We found tigers in multiple places, but we went to a zoo and saw a tiger.
That's cheating.
And we saw Santa Claus in the Museum of American History on a poster advertising Coca-Cola for Christmas. So that was pretty good, getting to see all of those in our travels. So that was definitely good. I definitely recommend that in terms of that. And then in addition, like, we just kind of had some lazy morning, so we were going into D.C., but we just purposely didn't make it, like, okay, we are getting up at 7:30 a.m., we're going to be on the 8:15 train, and we're going to walk all day, and we're going to see everything we can. We tried to make it a little bit relaxing that, hey, we'll walk around for 6 hours, but do we need to walk around for 10? Mm-hmm. You know, not really. So the mornings, typically, I was up. My mother-in-law came with us, and my daughter, my wife was a little bit slower getting up than the rest of us, and we would sit around and play some games in the morning, and that was super fun just to have those on hand and try a couple different things. Well, we hit on a game that I was going to review earlier, but I'm going to talk about it now because it's a perfect spot. That was just awesome for this. It was just perfectly built for these, like, lazy vacation mornings. Fabled Fruit from Friedman Friess and Stronghold Games, and it's awesome. It's just perfect for playing over and over again. So in Fabled Fruit, you have a little hand of fruit cards, and there's like five different fruits, and you're trying to go to the juice bar and make fruits for these different animals. So I got to discard three pineapples and anything I want, and I can make a hippo a shake or whatever. And the first person to make four shakes in a three-player game wins the game. But what's cool is it's worker placement. So you put your pawn on one of those animals, and they all have these different features. So I think the hippo is draw two cards, and the like moose is discard and draw back up to three, and all sorts of different stuff like this. Or you can put your pawn on them on your turn and make their shake for them, and then you get one of their cards and you draw a new card off of a giant stack of cards that keeps going, and now there's a new animal that comes out and a new thing you can make and a new action. And so the game just evolves as you play more and more games. And so we found we didn't want to just play one game. Everything set up, we would finish, we'd just set the cards aside, they're now out of the game, we'd start the next game with everything, and everybody was excited to play with the new animals and whatnot. It was super fun. It was great for that, like, morning kind of wait to get going. And or then, like, my wife would, she'd jump in, and we'd have a four-player game for a little bit. Or, you know, if my daughter's got a little tired of playing on her own, she'd, like, join a team. And so that was super fun, being able to do that. And then I could just have, like, games in my backpack, and if we stop somewhere, we could just play something really fast, you know, that was simple. Kind of like you were saying, bringing out those games that you don't get to play very often. But, hey, since this is light and simple, we could just play it right here at the table or on a bench or whatever it was. Like, just those small pocket-type games that were really fun. So
I think part of that is just finding a good, like, go-to group of games. Like, I feel like that's just that would be key to really have have a couple that you can just say, this is with me. If you want to play, that's great. Like, we could do that and just hop right in. Because I think part of the tough thing for me, you know, whenever I'm going anywhere, if it's to the store for an event or, you know, wherever it is, like, I'll pack way too much, like, way too many, like, the games that I bring are way too much for, like, way too many games for what we have time for. Because it's, like, you know, trying to figure out what sort of mentality we'll be in at that point in time, or what people would want to play, or all that stuff. So I kind of try to think through all that, but it's kind of in the sense where, like, if I just said, this is what I've got with me, I think that might be an easier way to just to know what people are looking to hop into. And then you've just got to go to where, you know, maybe you've played it every time you go somewhere, but that could be part of what you're, you know, what that means to vacationing or traveling or whatnot. Like, that just kind of becomes part of what you'll be looking forward to.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the other key too, like you're saying, if it's really like more the vacationing end, I guess, than the traveling end with like family or whatever, is it's knowing those people and knowing like what game at what time of day will work. Because I'm all about like, okay, we're on vacation and the kids go to bed and it's 10 o'clock at night at a beach house. Boom, here we go. We could play games till 3 a.m, but everybody's tired.
Right.
Being up all day in the sun, the kids get up early, and so people are just done. And so that happened to me a bunch. I know 2 years ago when we were on vacation, it ended up just being Kathy, my wife, and I staying up playing Arcadia Quest, the two of us, which was a blast, but we didn't really get a lot of other people. But timelines coming out at 1 p.m, or, you know, pre-dinner while some people are cooking, we're sitting there playing No Thanks, or something like that. So those would work really well, kind of those lighter, like, oh, I could jump in, jump out of this. So if I had to help with something, that would be okay. So that kind of worked in that group, but knowing your setting, you know. If I was going to go away with a whole bunch of my gaming friends, well, I would know, okay, just bring those heavy games. Like, this is an excuse for people to get in that, you know, 10-hour game of Colonists or whatever.
Well, it was nice, like, you know, I hadn't really played games with my mother-in-law, really, but when we were on vacation, we got Codenames out and Codenames Pictured. Like, both of those were just on the table, and we got her to play some games, so that was really cool, you know. So there are definitely ways you can get everyone engaged, and I think something like that is a great one to just have set up, and people can kind of come and go as they please, like you're saying.
Yeah, that's a great key to that. So.
All
right, tell us about your traveling. Maybe you travel for business and you bring games or even solo games. Brian's a huge solo gamer now, so you can talk to him about that.
I played two games solo in
the
past
travels
month.
With Scythe solo for business trips. So tell us about your traveling or vacationing game experience. You can send us an email at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right, there it is. Episode number 45 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. Brian, why don't you just tell us about some of these last-minute things, events, and items we'll have at the International Tabletop Day.
Yeah, so I guess the main thing, there are going to be a lot of promos that are coming in. We're still trying to get all the logistics together. We haven't actually brought them in-house yet, but there are a lot of kits up there for, like, you know, promos for, you know, all these different games. Like, I think Clank had some up there, and I'm really blanking on, like, a lot of the other ones, but, like, it's neat. Like, a lot of companies are really getting on board trying to get stuff out for International Tabletop Day, so keep your eyes open. We should be getting a good amount of promos to kind of raffle off over the course of the game, the day. So that should be fun, and, you know, just keep your eyes open, like I said, and we really want to make this day about you guys and really have it as, like, a community building sort of thing. Get people involved in board gaming and just playing all these great games.
Nice. So, yeah. Last plug. International Tabletop Day, April 29th. Be there or be frank. So, yeah, that's it for Portal Gaming Podcast. So, great episode, Brian.
Yeah, thank you. That was fun. It had been too long.
All right, and let's go back to me winning and you losing games. So until next time, I am your host, The Brant.
And I am your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal.
Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on April 19, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.